It's no secret. Health insurance is beyond expensive, right? Some Connecticut residents have said they're even opting to just forego having insurance altogether because they can't afford it. And after subsidies expired in December, let's be honest, our marketplace has been shrinking. Health insurance has only gotten more and more expensive. And so Connecticut lawmakers are once again efforting to try to find affordable solutions. One idea that has come up year after year after year in legislative sessions and has essentially just not passed, it hasn't gone anywhere, involves association plans. And this can certainly help small businesses across the state of Connecticut. And so to get that perspective, we welcome to the show Grace Brangwyn, who is the policy director covering healthcare, insurance, and housing issues for CBIA. Grace, welcome to the show. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks so much for having me today.
Absolutely. So, Grace, I'd love to hear the perspective from CBIA because I've certainly had lawmakers come on. This has really been pushed by the Republican side in Connecticut. Specifically, State Senator Tony Huang has come on year after year talking about this. And behind closed doors, it seems like there's a lot of support around this. It has made it out of committee before. It's never been pulled for a vote. But it is one of the solutions, essentially, that even Comptroller Sean Scanlon, who would love to do a public option, has said maybe we could combine or come up with kind of a solution for both and have them in some regard here in Connecticut. From a business standpoint, why does CBIA support association plans?
Absolutely. So association health plans allow small businesses to pool their risk and purchase health insurance through a trade association or a local chamber of commerce. So by banding together, these small employers can negotiate better rates and essentially decrease the amount of premiums that they have to pay, not only for their employers, but their employees as well. And what we're really seeing is a lack of options in the small group market specifically. You know, in your introduction, you alluded to the expiration of tax credits on the exchange. So we're hearing from small businesses across the state that their premiums have skyrocketed hundreds of dollars. And now they're paying almost the equivalent of, you know, an extra month in rent for healthcare costs. So I think we need a solution now. And now it's time to strike when the iron's hot.
Why do you think this hasn't gotten approval in the past, Grace? I mean, what would be the opposing point? Why wouldn't people be on board with association plans, especially because, to your point, this would really help small businesses be able to afford it for themselves and their employees?
Yeah, so in past years, we have kind of faced three buckets of criticism. First, we have received critiques that these plans would discriminate against those with pre-existing conditions. There's also been concerns about the solvency of these plans. So really looking at their long-term financial soundness and how that's going to be sustainable for years to come. And, you know, there's also concerns over how these plans are going to be regulated. So CBIA has made a conscious effort to address all three of those critiques in the current version of the bill. You know, it is codified in the current language that there can be, under no circumstance, any discrimination against those with pre-existing conditions. There's also solvency requirements where this plan needs to be have the solvency equivalent of a health insurance company, according to the Connecticut General Statutes. And there's also a lot of regulation in regards to how the state regulates these plans, in addition to association health plans being regulated under ERISA as well. So, we really have made a conscious effort to address all these critiques, and I hope that narrative really comes out in today's public hearing.
Grace, for people, so I understand what association plans are because sure. I have a father who has a health insurance brokerage in Fairfield, Connecticut. So I know too much about health insurance. I shouldn't know this much about it. But for the average person, we keep saying association plans, and I realize that is a very common phrase that I'm very aware of, what it means, how it works, all of that. Could you, in the most basic terms, so we understand, you know, how it works essentially, but what exactly is an association plan, or kind of give me even an example? Say you are a restaurant owner, say you are a retailer, I don't know, you're a local business owner in Connecticut, which, by the way, we have many, 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 a lot of them. What does that look like? Like, what would an association plan, I guess, look like, you know, as a rough example for somebody compared to what the options are right now?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the example that I've been using particularly revolves around credit unions because they've been a very fervent supporter of this proposal in the past. So, you know, kind of going along with your example, if I own a restaurant that has, you know, 5 full-time employees. And I go to a carrier and I get quoted a premium or, you know, receive a quote that's really not affordable. I would then pool my risk with another restaurant who also has 5 employees who also would receive a quote that is kind of unsustainable. We would then go together as a pool of 10 instead of 5 to a carrier and ask for a new quote that would quote the combination of our combined employees. So instead of individual employers going to a carrier, multiple employers would join together and pool their risk. So the risk pool is greater than what the individual employer would essentially ask for.
So I think when you use that kind of an example, so if I understand correctly, one of the concerns people have with an association plan is, let's say you've got 5 restaurants that have all pooled together, mm-hmm. and now it's a little bit more reasonable. Now it's more affordable. We can make that work. But one of those restaurants fails. What happens? Say they have to shut down.
Well, so, you know, in terms of insolvency, there is a provision that would require the rest of the pooled enrollees to cover the cost if the plan does go insolvent. So there is that provision, but I often communicate to folks in this space that you want to think of it as kind of like a mutual fund. The bigger the risk pool, if someone gets sick, then the rest of the pool would not be as affected. So really thinking long term, the bigger the pool, the lower the composite rate and the lower the cost that the pooled employees have to pay.
This also probably sounds very silly, Grace, but I'm going to ask it anyways. So say I'm a restaurant owner. We're sticking with the restaurant. That's what we're doing. So, I own a restaurant, okay? So
it's breakfast time, Melissa. Okay.
Yeah, right? Maybe I'm just starving. Okay, so I own a restaurant. Here we go. And where do I find 5 other restaurants who can pool with me? How do I even find that?
Yeah, so to be eligible for a association health plan, you have to participate in either a trade association or a chamber of commerce well. So, again, there is that kind of like centralized administrative body that would administer these health plans. But I also wanted to, you know, remind the audience that we have to reframe the narrative and think about associations as working in addition to the current models of insurance,
exactly,
rather than instead of.
Right.
Right. So ICRIS would still exist.
Thank you.
The exchange would still exist. So they could all kind of be just other options in this marketplace.
There it is. So again, this is an option that you can opt into doing. You are not required to do it, which I think that's probably one of the most frustrating things about this, which is why I made you kind of dance around all of this, Grace, so I apologize. But the point of it was I think sometimes we look at it as like, okay, that's law. That's what I have to do. No, I don't know why we wouldn't offer this option. I really don't. I think if it like anything, right? So if people want to have the best insurance ever, and this is where my insurance passion comes out. If you want to have the best insurance ever, it's a risk. Why is it a risk? Maybe nothing will happen to you. I hope to God nothing happens to you. That's me knocking on wood. But people will still invest in the best insurance possible. So think about it. You invest all this money into a policy, and some people don't even touch it. They don't, other than their doctor visits, they really don't even use it. Anytime you enroll in anything with insurance, there is a risk because you just don't know what the future is going to look like. So why we wouldn't allow for association plans, because essentially opponents don't like the risk, is just backwards thinking to me. You could say that for any type of insurance plan, in my opinion.
Well, mostly you're really, you know, preaching to the choir here. So I totally resonate with what you're saying. And, you know, we have to acknowledge as well that association health plans are not a panacea. They're not a cure-all. We're still seeing a large coverage gap, and this is kind of a discussion for another day, you know, in the micro market, you know, for sole proprietors, for those who hold 1099 tax status, and those who work in the gig economy. So association health plans really target a very specific market at a very urgent moment in time. And to your point, you know, these plans are all voluntary. If you strongly feel as if you are benefiting from plans on the exchange, you're more than welcome to stay on that plan. That's just really an option for our small employers, especially those who do have a low number of employees, to really access that high-quality, affordable health care.
Grace Brangwen is here, policy director covering health care, insurance, and housing issues for CBIA. And there is a public hearing happening today. The Insurance Committee will hear testimony regarding association plans. Grace, do other states have association plans? Like, where did this concept, I guess, come from that Connecticut then started to push it forward? And what has been the feedback, I guess, for small businesses that have this option?
Yeah, so there are multiple states who offer this kind of plan. You know, Virginia, Maine, and New Jersey are some of the more prominent examples of who have a self-funded MIWA. And, you know, in the past few years, Connecticut has modeled our MIWA legislation specifically off Virginia. You know, but I think this year there's a lot of flexibility in how these association health plans can be formatted. And this year we really have focused on making these kinds of plans more accessible to smaller chambers of commerce or smaller trade associations by adjusting what's called the capital reserves. So how much money the sponsoring association would require in order to set up a MIWA.
So when you, okay. So we do have obviously confirmed states where this is going on. And has CBIA connected with, you know, other states to get kind of feedback? Like, have you heard from, I keep bringing up the restaurant. We could bring up whoever we want. Have we heard from businesses where they feel like, wow, I have saved, you know, tens of thousands of dollars a year because of association plans? Like, have we heard, you know, I guess, similar testimony for places that have already seen success with this type of health insurance coverage?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I had a great conversation with the lady from the Maine Credit Unions, and she had a very compelling story of one employer member who literally saved, you know, hundreds of dollars on his healthcare costs by enrolling through an association health plan offered by that credit union, a trade association. You know, I've also been in talks again with the Virginia Chamber, a lot of emails, actually. I'm surprised she hasn't blocked my my email address yet. But, you know, I've been talking with my counterpart down there. And currently, over the 6 years that they've had this association health plan, they have over 1,800 enrolled lives. And they're able to offer around 250 different plans to those who are enrolled in their MIWA. So there's a lot of flexibility, like I said, but, you know, thinking long term, I think that every MIWA needs to be reflective of that current state's healthcare environment. And that is exactly what, you know, this version of the bill is trying to achieve.
If association plans get passed this legislative session, could there also be the passage of the public option, which the comptroller has been really pushing for, I know is getting a lot of support for as well? I think that is a different sector of Connecticut residents. And again, from a personal standpoint, having a broker for a father, husband, and a brother, I don't love the idea of the public option because it really takes them out of the equation. But again, that's me personally. Could we live in a place where you have the public option as well as association plans offered?
I think that could be a possibility. And also we look to states like Washington State who have a public option, but they also have an association health plan. Mm. You know, to my earlier point, if we're to pass any healthcare solution in the state, we need to make it amenable and reflective of what Connecticut's current environment looks like. So, you know, in this bill, actually, the last section requires OPM to study the feasibility of establishing a Connecticut option and MIWAs with the goal of reducing healthcare premiums for those enrolled in both programs. So I think, you know, that is a thoughtful approach. But also we're hearing that there's different versions of this public option. You know, Comptroller Scanlon is saying one proposal, whereas, you know, Governor Lamont in his budget address at the beginning of session talked about a preferred provider network. So we don't have a lot of details as of yet. And I think this bill is trying to uncover, you know, the compatibility of a Connecticut option and a MIWA.
Yeah, that's a good point. So part of the public hearing that's going on is going to also address doing a deeper dive and understanding what the public option would really look like here in Connecticut. And I just know from my many conversations with Comptroller Sean Scanlon, yes, we need more options. Individuals need to have more options to have affordable health care. I couldn't agree with that more. But when I did ask him directly, would this take brokers out of the equation? And he said in the version he basically is looking at, to some degree, yes. However, could there be a public option where you still involve local brokers and let them keep their jobs and give kind of personalized health care advice to residents in Connecticut? Maybe. But that's the only part of public option that I worry a lot about, because you're going to put brokers out of business. And I also think that takes away the personalized kind of advice that you get from a broker, much like you would a financial advisor, you know, what have you. That part worries me about public option, but that is part of today's public hearing, is not just looking at association plans, but also kind of a study into the public option and what that could look like for Connecticut. So, Grace, I want to thank you for what you do at CBIA, and thank you so much for taking the time to discuss this with us here on WICC, especially ahead of the public hearing. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Melissa, and I hope to come back again very, very soon.
Oh, you're welcome back anytime, Grace. I love chatting with you. It was great. You have great insight, and I appreciate all that you do. And yeah, you are welcome back anytime. So I'll have my people call your people. That would be great. Grace Brangwyn here again, policy director covering healthcare, insurance, and housing issues for CBIA right here on WICC.